What's up and welcome to another episode of the Scott and Ian Show on the SBL podcast. Scott and I are going to be talking about versatility today. Is it important? Does it matter? Like, should you just commit to one thing? Like, if you love the pick, should you just commit to that and just be like, nope, sorry, bro, rock and roll vibes forever. That's what I do. Or if you're a slapper, should you just be like, nope, Davey 504 forever. I'm only slapping the bass. Or if you just like swing, should be like, nah, man, I'm just going to commit to this. There is part of that that is very alluring. And this conversation came up around the great drummer Dave Elitch, killing drummer, killer teacher, who talked about versatility being a bit of a sham. And listen, I have prided my career on being versatile. So I don't know that I agree, but I do agree with part of it. And Scott and I get into it today. It's so awesome. I really enjoyed this conversation with Scott. So check it out. If you're on that fence of like, what do I do? Like, you have to be versatile to play in that variety band, to do the wedding gig thing. But then maybe you have a band where you're doing something else. You're like, but should I just commit to this one thing? Oh, it's the push and the pull. It's the push and the pull. We're going to get all into it today. Hey, let me tell you what's going on at SBL this week. Very cool. Check it out. We have a mentor session coming up Monday, June 26th with the great Gary Willis. He's going to be talking about 1983 versus 2023. What's changed for bass players? If my math is correct, that's 40 years. That's 40 years he's been in the game professionally playing the bass. He's going to be talking about his wisdom, insight around what's changed for players. Also, you guys, Bass Space 2023, I've got the hat from 2022 on, but Bass Space registration just opened. It's a free event. It's going to be July 14th through 16th, free, 3 days of incredible content around instruction. There's going to be interviews. There's going to be clinics. We're going to be talking to bass players about bass lines, about gear, about their insights. It's amazing. If you were there for 2022, you know it was incredible. It really was, even if I do say so myself. And 23 is going to be even better. So check it out. Get up and get signed in for Bass Space 2023 so you don't miss anything. It's going to be a blast. Okay, that's enough of me. Here we go. Let's get into it with me and Scott.
You've got all of the, the SBL gear. I freaking love that hoodie. That's a great hoodie. Yeah.
I do too.
I was going to call it the marble effect, but it's not marble. It's like tie-dye, right?
Yeah, it's kind of tie-dye, but it almost looks like leaves or something. I love it, man. We're, I think after there's a couple of projects that are happening at SBL. Oh my God, can't get the hood off now. Just like, well, this is the new normal. Just stuck like this forever.
Let's see if you know this, right? Who do you know that's got a really strong tie-dye game?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it. There are some dudes in this.
Musician, really strong tie-dye game.
Okay, I'm out. I was going to talk about Flavor World, which is this sick clothing company and record label in Minnesota. I wear one of their shirts a lot that's like black and brown. Tie-dye, I wear it too much, probably.
Flavor World.
Yeah, Flavor World. Shout out. Oh, they're so great. Drew at Flavor World is the best. They are running a little venue and making clothes, and I just think it won't be long before the main guy, Drew at Flavor World, is doing some really, really big, cool stuff.
They've got some good tie-dye stuff.
Yeah, it's cool, right?
Yeah. And,
I mean, we're old enough to see it come around a few times. Remember when tie-dye was super hip? Then, like, not hip at all.
Yes.
Well, yeah. It's back.
Yeah. Tie-dye's back. The guy I always think, like, and I love it, by the way. If anybody's wondering why the fuck are you talking about tie-dye, I freaking love tie-dye stuff, even though I've got none. But anyway, Matt Garska, is it Garska?
Oh, yeah.
From Animals Are Leaders. Animals is leader. He's got some serious tie-dye game going on. Like, serious tie-dye game going on. Hey, and if you haven't checked him out, guys, you should absolutely check Matt out. He's just such a freaking awesome player. And obviously, check out Animals is Leaders. But also, he did a great trio. I think it's a trio. Let me check. With Henrik Linde.
Ah.
Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, dude. It's boss. It was like a minor symbols thing. So there's, there's like four tracks. One, yes. Two. Yeah, it's a fusion jizz fest. Here we go.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's monstrous.
The piano player is out of this world. Piano player is, what's his name? Eldar Jan Grivov. I just butchered his name. I'm sorry, Eldar. But like that, it's such a great trio. I'm going to watch them after this. I've got a meeting after this. But okay, after the meeting, I'm going to record this.
Listen, when I come out there again in June, if we drive somewhere, we just need to listen to fusion, because I struggle with like hearing it and loving it. I hear it and it hits me here and I'm like, oh yeah, listen to that old time signature and all those notes, but I don't feel it in my heart. I just need to spend a little more time. I think liking music is about repetition, and it's about who you hang with.
Maybe. But what happens if it's just not you, dude?
Yeah,
what happens
I know.
If it's not you? I have that with certain styles of music where I just listen to it and I'm a bit like, meh. I know, and like some of the people I know are like super into it, and I'm like,
oh,
meh.
Divulge this information. What do you go? Can you say?
Oh, it's defend. Okay. So like, I've got like loads of friends, for instance, that's into Kanye West, and love Kanye West, right?
Let's go easy. College Dropout. But have you listened to Graduation Day and College Dropout? Have you listened to those records?
Briefly. It will be, you know, A Big Fat Life. I was like, oh yeah. Like I have listened to them. I dipped my toes in the warm water.
There's some really incredible stuff, and his production and how he made beats. Also, my favorite record is 808s and Heartbreaks. That it has like synth bass lines on it that were really inspiring to me. But yeah, I mean, Kanye now, gross. You know, and like just for so many reasons. So
is his music still good though?
I mean, I fell out a long time ago. It got too obtuse for me. I just remember I saw a show of Kanye's in New York City. It was outside, and it was just like a red, like the stage had like a red LED wall.
Yeah.
And it was just like these weird, like glitchy beats with him going like, yeah. With a bunch of like delays on it. And I mean, it was so out.
Well, just like completely out there. Just like,
yeah. And right, he did come out and then do some stuff, but it was like out. And I was like, man, I want College Dropout again. I just want like funky beats and like clever rhymes. I pine for the old Kanye.
It's sad what happened, isn't it? Like, I'm not sure if anybody's sort of like, I think it was more, I guess, sort of current over in the US, but he kind of had like a public meltdown. That's like a light version of what happened. But the interesting thing is that like so many people that I've seen online that have mentioned meeting him back in the day were just like, oh, he's the nicest guy. And I was like, oh, isn't it? You know, super sad to see somebody have like a public kind of stuff, like, yeah, implosion. Yeah,
and I think I had an experience with somebody, an acquaintance that was, you know, shaping up to be a friend who is manic bipolar.
Yeah.
And I had an experience with this person on a Zoom call where he told me his plans for artistic and, you know, and like world domination. And it was so, he was so enthusiastic and so convincing. But it was high ambition, like where anyone would hear it and go crazy. But he was so in such a way that you kind of are like, wow, I mean, I wonder if this dude is really going to do this. Well, yeah. Man, turns out, no, he was having a manic episode. And I'd never experienced that where someone was talking about like these high ambitions of, you know, and then like, oh, that was a chemical imbalance, essentially.
Yeah, he was just completely out of his face.
And Kanye has, you know, he's manic bipolar. And so, you know, I think when he goes on the rants about, I'm not excusing what he said about Jews or, but like when he goes on rants about, you know, running for president and ruling the world and all that, I think he's in a manic state.
Yeah.
You know, I just never, you know, you just think like, oh, these people are crazy. Well, they have a condition, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah not and now, to excuse
and now,
it, but.
And now it goes down in front of sort of like millions of people all over the internet. Oh, God.
Exactly. The yeah. Worst, it's not just your, yeah. It's not just your dudes that you're hanging with. Yeah. It's everybody.
It's everybody, on Rogan. Isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But all that to say, like, there are styles of music where I'm like, eh. And there are also styles of music that I'm, like, way into that you would never think. Like, sort of like traditional, like, Willie Nelson country.
Yeah.
Give it to me all day long. Everly Brothers all day long.
Yes. But that's like, because you're smart, and that's because you're that's because you know what's good, Scott Devine. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I think you know, there's people say like, when it's good, it's good. I resonate with that to some degree. I love storytellers. I love Willie.
Oh,
I
so
love, I mean, did you ever get into Glenn Campbell? I mean, I know, you know, Wichita Lineman, but oh, like Galveston and Glenn Campbell is incredible. Yeah, man. He's a freak show.
He's so great. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a session guy that then became an artist, which interesting. He was a guy that played everything.
Yeah.
Versatile to the max.
Bonkers. And then, Chet Atkins? It's Chet Atkins. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Like he was a, is Chet still around or not? I can remember something.
I don't know.
All you old schoolers out there, and even old schoolers past me, like, I don't know if you had them in the States. Remember, like, Chet Atkins playing with, like, he had that show, TV show, and Mark Knopfler was on it, and they'd have, like, the Everly Brothers on it, and they'd have Emmylou Harris on it, and they'd have Albert Lee, who was, like, the guitar player for the Everly Brothers. Like, Albert Lee's a freak show, man.
Yeah, I don't know that I ever saw that.
It's cool.
Whose show was it? Like, who was the host?
It was Chet Atkins' show.
Chet Atkins was the host?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Scott, have you ever heard of the Porter Wagner show?
No, I don't think so.
Porter Wagner was a singer, songwriter, country, and it was sort of like Johnny Carson, but in the South. And he broke Dolly Parton.
No.
Who came on, dude, and was the musical guest for a while every episode. Like, there was always like a musical segment with Dolly, and she was like 19.
No,
it is crazy.
Wow.
And his band was crazy. And then Dolly and Porter were like an item for a while. And then, you know, it went south.
Dolly was like, so wait a minute.
Yeah. She was like, hold on. Is this guy actually riding my coattails? I think he is. But yeah, that show was amazing. I had a guy, you know, was on a tour bus, and there was a guy who watched that. He had like tapes of it, you know, he'd burn stuff of it, and we would watch it. And it was just this whole new, I mean, the United States is so damn big, and there's all these different pockets of culture. I didn't even know that existed. Like, I didn't know the Porter Wagner show existed. They're in like rhinestone suits with cactuses on them and stuff.
Oh, dude, he's got some serious sideboards as well, or sideburns.
Yeah.
Is it Captain Burnside? Is that why your sideburns are called sideburns?
I don't know. What do you guys call them?
Because of this guy called Captain Burnside? I don't know. Maybe. I saw that in a film. Some sort of like...
Burnside?
Something like that. What do you call them? Sideboards, I think.
Boards?
Yeah. I think sideboards.
Well, that makes more sense.
I don't know, man.
Sideboards? God, I've never heard that in my life.
Sideboard? Hang on. I might be absolutely talking out my ass right now.
Does anybody call them mutton chops in the UK?
Yeah.
Okay.
Captain Burnside. Yeah. So Captain Burnside was a major general in the Union Army during the American Civil War of 1961 to 65.
1861 to 1865.
Instantly recognizable for his bushy sideburns.
And that's why it's called that, dude?
That is why they're called Burnsides, or whatever it's called, your Burnside, yeah.
Sideburns, dude.
Sideburns, sorry, yeah.
Because of Captain Burnside.
Yeah, because of Captain Burnside. Yeah.
Oh, weird. Oh, that's
not Captain
wild.
Burnside. Burnside. Sorry.
They just flipped it.
Yeah.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah, I think it was in a film. It was in a great film, actually. I can't remember what the film is, but yeah, great film. Anyhow, So this guy, where did you hear this? So what we're going to be talking about today is whether versatility on bass or actually any instrument, and whether you should focus on getting versatility into your bag of tricks is overrated, whether it's underrated, or, you know, anywhere in between. And it kind of
properly rated.
Oh, yeah. And you wanted to talk about it based on this. Where did you hear this guy talking about this?
Dave Elitch. So I'm going to spell his last name, E-L-I-T-C-H. Dave Elitch is a really interesting character and drummer. He's got an awesome Instagram. He has played with Weezer, Miley Cyrus, Justin Timberlake, Mars Volta, M83, 1975. He has an online course, but he's played in some more like, I wouldn't say like traditional swinging jazz, but he's played in some more sort of like avant projects as well, you know, that of course aren't as well known as Miley Cyrus and Weezer. But I came to know him through Dave King, who's a legendary jazz drummer in the Bad Plus from Minneapolis. I've devoured all of Dave King's Rational Funk content, and Dave Elitch was on an episode of Rational Funk. So Dave Elitch is like one of those bad dudes who plays pop music, but has a lot going on under the hood, right? A lot of chops, a lot of vocabulary. Dave Elitch, I don't think Dave Elitch is from Minneapolis. Dave King, who is the Bad Plus drummer, is from Minneapolis. And that's how I found out about Elitch. But check him out on Instagram. He had a post. He put up a post recently where he was talking about versatility and talking about the academic push for versatility, and saying, you know, when you go to college, music school, or you take online courses or anything, there is this big, big push of like, you have to know how to play the tumbao rhythm. You have to know how to walk a bass line. You have to know how to play rock with a pick. You have to be versatile. You have to have, you know, all the different, in his case, all the different snare drums to cover the different, you know, you've got to be able to have your brush game together. In bass world, that means you got to have P bass with flats, and you've got to have jazz bass with rounds in case you get that call that you know, you're going to go play that rock gig, or you're going to go play that jazz brunch. You got to be ready, versatile, and ready to play any style of music. And he was saying that he thinks that's bullshit. He thinks instead what you should do is double down on something that you love. Instead of focusing on versatility and being every bass player, being the chameleon, he thinks that you should pick the thing or things, the handful of things that you love, and forget about all that stuff. I might be oversimplifying this in my paraphrase, but that was the vibe of the post. This versatility thing that academia pushes is bullshit. And I have thoughts about it, and I'm sure you do too. And I just love the guy.
I love it. Yeah. I tell you what,
yeah, just fascinating.
He is, like, I've not heard him play. I'm on his website. I'm looking. He's heavy, right?
Yeah.
He's really heavy because he's got, like, you guys might not know your drummers, but I certainly do. And his student list is Benny Greb. It is Greg Bissonette.
Yeah.
It is Blair Sinter. I mean, like, these are heavy players, and they're basically saying, hey, you know, I would, like, for instance, Greg Bissonette here, he's like, says Dave is one of my favorite drummers to listen to. He has got a lot going on in every style. That's interesting. Luckily for me, he said that he'd love to teach and that he would be happy to take me on as a student. He's incredible at breaking things down and telling me exactly how he does them. I love practicing the things he shows me. But so this is like Greg Bissonette, who's like one of the best drummers in the world. He's a legend. There's all of these other legendary players on here who have been getting lessons from Dave. So yeah, he's a monster. He's a monster, and it looks like he's a freaking awesome teacher as well. So yeah.
And shout I love out to these Dave. Players in the space, not just drummers, but everybody that have all of this horsepower, teaching chops, academic chops, right? Dave has worked on the Latin rhythms. yeah. but also really respects pop music. I love that hybrid. It's my favorite hybrid because I guess yeah. it reminds me of my trajectory. I mean, I worked on a bunch of academic exercises. I know how to play a Latin tumbao, but my love is actually pop music, rock music, hip hop music, electronic music. And so when I see Dave, it really resonates with me. That said, I don't know that I fully agree with this assertion that versatility is bullshit. And I think if we had Dave on the podcast, he might walk that back a little bit and say, well, versatility is not necessarily bullshit. It just depends on what you want to do. But I want to get your take on this, Scott. How do you feel about this statement?
Yeah, I dig it. I mm-hmm. really dig it with a caveat. And I think that Dave yeah, would have yeah. the same caveat,
yeah.
is that it depends on where you are. That's yes. what I would say to a student. And I've been in that situation thinking, should I lean more into a particular area and stop freaking worrying about everything else? You know, because you've got a finite amount of time, if you split yourself too thin, like, you know, yeah, spread yourself too thin, sorry, you are going to... you know, you're not going to be able to go as deep as you might do if you were, you know, really focusing on one thing. I'm going to draw a diagram actually just to show you.
Oh, Scott's out of the chair. He's going to get it. He's going to get the diagram going.
Yeah.
He's going to get the diagram.
So, yes. I might have done this before. Actually, let me find a bit of blank paper. So the way I see it,
a bit of scratch paper, mate.
I'm going to draw two circles. And on one of the circles, there's going to be, let's say, there's going to be an arrow at 1 o'clock, kind of like half two. I mean, two yes. o'clock, three, no, like, what's this, like 12 o'clock, half one, 3 o'clock, you know, sort of like, basically like this, right? I'll hold it so you can see it. Can you see that?
I mean, not with the quality of the screen grab that we've got right now.
Can you see that now?
But I believe that it's there.
Okay, right. So my point is that you'll have to kind of like look at that. Can you see that now?
This cat's drawing you diagrams, people. No, okay. I can't see it, but hopefully the lovely people on YouTube. No, yeah, no, okay, I got it. I'm seeing it now. It's coming into focus.
This circle here with all of these little arrows all around it, okay?
Yes.
That's the focus, right? That's right. The focus. And yep. you get a little bit of focus on each arrow. Well, each of yep. these little things is something that you're focusing on, where like soloing or reading or whatever it is, right? Or... Yep. You can get all of that attention and just use it to focus on one big arrow.
Whoa.
And you're going to go much deeper, right? So the second circle only has one arrow coming out of it.
Yes.
But it's a lot deeper. And that means you're focusing a lot harder and a lot deeper on one particular subject. You're doing what Dave is talking about. You're going all in one particular area. And I think that there's absolutely a space to do that. My caveat is it, I think it depends on what level you are as a player. Yes. And, you know, you're going to have to work that out for yourself for the most part. And sometimes it isn't really obvious, you know. But I kind of sort of like think about this, you know, today, because we just talked about it briefly today of talking about this. I think about it in kind of like three different levels. Number one, learn how to play. You know, that's just sort of like you're starting out. You just need to get off the ground. You need to learn how to play. You need to get your basic technique together so you can yes. move around the instrument. You need to learn the notes. You need to learn how to, you know, get a good tone and a good sound out of the instrument, which is also technique based. Not, you know, I'm not talking about amps here. I'm talking sort of like about the amount of flesh that you have on the string, you know, all of that good stuff. You need to learn how to play. So once you've learned how to play, and who knows what that really means, like how far you go down that journey. But once you've learned to play, then I, like me personally, would actually recommend learning different styles. And I think that you'd be a real disadvantage if you didn't, because there's so much to learn from different styles of music. Like, just think about funk music, the syncopation that's in there. Yes. You know, it's just, it's like a rhythmic masterclass learning funk, all of the different, you know, genres of funk as well, right? Whether it be sort of like Bootsy or Larry Graham or the Chili Peppers or Jamiroquai, all different feels, all different kind of vibes of funk. And there's a lot to learn from learning those bass lines that have been written by the masters of the past. So learning the language, same thing with Latin, right? You know, there's so much to be learned by learning like basic tumbaos, understanding that, hey, you don't have to play on the one, right? You can actually anticipate that and really becoming comfortable with anticipating the one and all of that good stuff.
Yes, yes.
And blues, like what's it like to hold down like a
to
blues?
Walk a blues,
to,
yeah.
Yeah, to walk a blues, just to sort of like hold it down in the pocket. So right. I think that there is a so much to learn by dedicating a certain amount of your, you know, of your musician life cycle, right? Dedicate it to focusing in on learning different different styles. And hey, it doesn't need to be all styles, but there are, you know, the ones that I've mentioned so far, they're probably ones that jump out to me personally. And sure. For anybody listening to this, they might want to, you know, jump into the ones that personally resonate with them as well. But that also depends on what their goal is. Do they want to just, you know, go play in a rock band? Or have they got any aspirations of playing on the sort of like in a semi-pro kind of way or professional way? Obviously, if you want to be a professional, I would just put it out there that you really need to have a basic understanding of the styles, because I have been that when I started out, somebody was like, well, you just end up on a gig and somebody's like, hey, let's play a jazz standard. You do not want to be the guy that's like,
dead.
What's a jazz standard?
Yeah,
I was
dead.
That guy when I started out. Yeah. I was dead. Same. I was dead. Oh, right. And I was on a folk gig once and I was like playing completely out of context. And they were like, what are you doing? I was like, you know, I've been listening to sort of like Steve Vai and suddenly I'm like, you know, playing Billy Sheehan lines. I'm on a folk gig and they're just like, whoa there, cowboy.
Yes.
You know, dial back that double hand tapping, whatever. I'm kidding, right? I'm kidding. But my point is that you don't want to be caught short. If you've got any aspirations to be a semi-pro bass player or a professional bass player and playing in different situations, you have to understand these basic styles. You do not need to be a reggae master. You don't you don't need to be a Latin master. You don't need to be a jazz master, but you need to be able to, you know, speak the language to a certain extent. Otherwise, you're going to get into trouble on a gig.
Yes.
And go on, go for it.
Oh, I was just going to say, I totally agree. And what I want to add to that is that I think this talking point, this thing of like, versatility, no, just focus on what you love, is actually dangerous for beginners, because if you haven't tasted a few things, you don't know what you love necessarily. Maybe you haven't given enough things a try to know like, oh, actually, I really want to pursue this thing. And if you don't have the facility and you haven't studied a few different things, you may not have the chops, the facility, the understanding to actually really pursue the thing that you do love. So I think this perspective is to an intermediate to advanced player. It's to someone in their 30s. Or 40s, or I don't know, maybe even late 20s, who's like maybe done some things, and then it's like, wait a minute, it's almost more of like a midlife or quarter life music crisis, where you're like, I've been trying to be every bass player. Hang on a minute. Do I need to do that? Maybe I need to do my own thing. Maybe I need to really focus and play with the artists that I really want to play with, or do my own project, or like, have to always playing the blues jam night that sucks? Like it's for that person. And I think, you know, so if that resonates with you out there, I think this advice is very good actually. But if you've only been playing bass for a year and a half and you're like, I can't really do anything, but I can play these five riffs. Maybe that's cool. And maybe you'll explode with those five riffs. But I think it's a disservice. This advice is a disservice to someone who is starting out and has maybe professional ambitions.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that when Dave was making that comment, he was making it to a very specific, probably his avatar of who's following him, probably right. Sort of like professional drummers. And he's right. Probably speaking directly to them and saying, hey, by the way, you should go all in on one thing. And that right. Brings me to level three. So level yeah. One, just learning to play. Level two, then sort of like learning about the language of music and doing that in different styles. Level yes. Three, I think, is going deep, going yeah. Into a particular, like, whatever it is that you want to be as a musician, because I think that if you don't, you run the risk of just not having a musical identity of who yeah. Who you are, right? Like, to really create and develop a musical identity, I think that you need to really, and I'm not saying that you can't, you know, keep playing different styles and stuff like that, but I think that you really need to dig in and go really super deep with something. So for you, Ian, like, I think that that has been the use of sound, actually. I think yes, it's a right. Sonic, you've gone down this sort of like sonic exploration, and
yes.
You've been able to craft these amazing bass sounds and and you're a freaking awesome player, obviously. Do you know what I mean? Like, that aside, I mean, you've got all of the freaking chops, you've got all of the harmony, you can play all over the fingerboard, you play sick slap bass. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got all of that down. But if somebody was like, but what's Ian's identity as a yeah. musician? I'd be like, oh, it's his command of, like, sonic space and being using effects to really create these sounds that are you. And it's really what sort of like I think that you're known for. And I think that did you as a musician just go down the freaking rabbit hole with that stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, are you asking, did I go down the rabbit hole of like effects and all those things?
Yeah. But did you just go down the rabbit hole? Did you
like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. And I will say too, I mean, my trajectory came up in a band. So I was very niche focused in the beginning. And then I had this like, oh, I need to learn how to play the bass, because I was teaching. And then I would remember, you know, kids would bring me they're trying to do the Donna Lee head. And I was like, okay, it's time. I need to learn how to do this. I yeah. taught bass at this college for a long time, and I got really versatile. And then, so I had this odd sort of like three periods. It was like very niche focused, super wide then in my 20s and 30s. And then when I turned 40, I was like, I need to follow this more of this Dave Ehlich advice of like, now I want to hone in. I feel like I've tasted a lot of things. I know that I'm never going to be like a gospel bass player. I know that I'm never going to, you know, go out and just be like blues guy. Although I played in this blues band with this amazing guitar player for a couple of years. I mean, that was in the cards. Could have been just like blues guy.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it. I mean, I liked it okay on the gig, and I was like, okay, yeah, but I wasn't like, oh man, I can't wait to play another 12 bars of this shit. Like, I don't love it. I know how to do it. And when the band was like, when the band was shuffling and felt really good, I was like, yeah, this is cool, but it is not me. I would go home and put on a Bjork record and try to grab those sounds. And so for the longest time I was experimenting with this sonic stuff you're talking about in the background and playing on projects in Minneapolis and thinking, could this work for me kind of like more full time? Do I just always have to be the guy that is the chameleon?
Yeah.
And so I really have lived this, and I know you have too, because you were on the ships, you were on the cruise ships, you were playing all the different styles, top 40, right? You're probably playing some Latin, of course, jazz,
yeah,
fusion music. But what was your trajectory like after you tasted all these things and learned all these styles? What happened to you after that?
So, well, at the same time, like, I was just all in with fusion.
You love fusion.
Yeah, I just love fusion, dude. And jazz, like jazz and fusion, sort of like, so it was always actually just running alongside it. Yes. And I was always sort of like playing it with friends and, you know, and doing all of that thing. So that's where, You know, and that comes out in, obviously, if you look at any of my early videos, I'm shredding in them.
So, it's who you are. It's your DNA. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, let's talk about melodic mind. And that's what sort of like, and harmony. And
yes,
like, that's the kind of stuff that really, that I love. Just like a lot of like, yeah, harmony and chords. And just, I love the way that chords sound. I know that sounds so weird.
No.
But I just love the way that chords sound. I'm like kind of obsessed by it. And then in terms of sort of like a creative outlet, I think that the album that I'm about to do in a few weeks' time is probably the first like proper creative outlet I'll have for the sort of like the true me, which is pretty crazy to say. Like, I'll be 45 and like 45 this year. It's not that I haven't been specializing it. I have been, you know, sort of like my heart's been there. But it's just like a combination of the hand issues that I've had over the last, you know, sort of like, you know, 10, 15 years have really held me back from sort of like doing anything like that. And then also just being busy with SBL, like, cause I've done live stuff. I've done sort of like, actually I did some, I wrote some tunes and did them on YouTube, like back in the day. I've got a band on there. It's called, got Louis Palmer, who's over in LA now, great drummer. Got a sax player on there. Yeah, remember those videos,
Yes, I remember that. Yeah. And is that where the old SBL theme came from?
Yeah, that old SBL theme I wrote on the way to a bass show in the car. I was
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Dude, that theme is sick. And that fill you play. Like ascending, descending fill you play. Oh.
Yeah, it was called Tune for Sunday because it was on a Sunday. I was driving to London for the bass show and I had a band and we were just going to go up and play some tunes. And I was like, oh, I need some tunes. And that one I wrote on the way down, which sounds weird, but I just sort of like had the theme in my head and I was like thinking about it. I was like, oh, da, 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 da. And then when I got down there, I just sort of like wrote it out in manuscript, the chords and stuff like that. And then I played the melody and and that's.
Is that 1-5-1-6?
It's like F minor to a D flat Lydian.
Yeah.
Major.
C sharp. Yeah.
It's so cool. I love that chord movement. That minor one.
Yeah.
The sort of like five, six, the flat six major is so nice.
Yes. But it's so good.
But I think that I guess sort of like the first time I realized that people do this specializing thing as well is when I was hanging with Gary Willis, when I was getting lessons from Gary back in the day. And I can remember him, you know, I was stressing about reading or whatever. I was like, oh, my reading's not very good. Mm, so like, Gary was like, so what, man? He was like, I don't really work on my reading. I'm not a great reader. And I was like, it blew my tiny mind because when I looked at Gary Willis, you know, like the you know, top bass players on the planet, like freak show. You just imagine that he can sort of like read the fly shit off your windshield, right? So,
exactly. Yes.
And he was like, no. He was like, nah. He was like, no, I'm not a great reader. And he was just, and then he said this line. He said, it's just something that didn't really do it for me, and I decided to focus really hard on something else. And that one thing that he said, that I was like, oh, okay, I can do that. So that's when I sort of like stopped stressing about it and stopped stressing actually about being super broad and actually going down into a particular area. And even though I was like professionally playing in lots of different situations, like in theaters and, you know, events and all of that thing, I really wanted to focus on getting my harmony and my solo in and my sort of like technique together for outlandish fusion that I wanted to play.
I love that Gary Willis thing of like, oh, you don't, I mean, I don't know. I didn't want to read, so I just didn't. It's like, whoa, it's almost this freedom, right? Because I had that same thing, Scott. I was working through the Mel Bay sight reading books.
Oh yeah.
And I was making all my students go through them. I had sight reading 1, 2, and 3. And like, I spent a little bit of time every day on it. But the problem for me is I just never had an outlet. I never had to read.
Yeah.
I didn't put myself in a situation, you know, and in Minneapolis, there's not a ton of theater work. There's a bit actually, but I was wondering, well, maybe if I get called and look to any of you out there who are thinking like, oh, I might get called for. It doesn't really work that way. Maybe occasionally you'll get some weird call out of the blue to do something that you've never done. But typically it's about the relationships that you build. So you can kind of count on, if you've done a lot of blues gigs, well, you'll probably get called by another artist that does some R&B or blues. Or if you're in gospel church scene, well, you're going to get called by another church to do. Or if you're in CCM, like White Coldplay Church, you will get called, guaranteed, by another church or artist that is in that zone. So it's like the people you surround yourself with and the music you make are typically the calls that you're going to receive. And for me, I really valued versatility. Like when I got out of my band and I'm in my 30s, I was like, okay, I need to play every gig. And I had this thing, Scott, did you ever do this where I wanted every gig I did, I didn't want them to know anything about me in terms of like, oh, actually, I'm a hair metal kid that likes hip hop and avant-garde electronic music. I wanted to fool them that I was playing that country thing, that pop country thing, so well that I didn't do anything else. And then the next night, I would go do like a deep cut R&B thing, and I'd be wearing a white shirt and black pants and a tie. And I'm going to bring a P bass, and I'm going to be so dialed into this that they're not going to know. Now, I don't know if
I freaking love this, dude. I know, but just like the practice of it would have been awesome, you know, like just to do that. I think it's awesome.
I really value that. For some weird reason, I was like, I'm going to be every bass player, and you are not going to know. You're not going to know.
Well, I did that. You want to be at like so good in a particular style that everybody's like, oh, this is his thing.
Oh, that's what they do. This and is then his they vibe, see me on some other gig and be like, wait a minute, you play like drop D rock and roll with a pick? And I'm like, yeah. And there was something about the mystery of the, not, I don't know, dude, if anybody thought that was particularly mysterious or cool, but I really valued it for some reason. And then after a decade of it, I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm going to make some choices, and I'm going to start to play with things that like really resonate with me. I don't need to say yes to every gig. I'm going to
be devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Maybe that is like, you know, I'm going hard into fusion. Like that's what I've always loved, you know, and sort of like jazz improvisation, right? That's my kind of bag. I've always lived it. Since I sort of like picked up the bass when I was a kid. If somebody's like, what is Ian's musical identity? And you're like, well, it's a soundscape thing. Really, really, you have got like a full mastery of creating epic sounds on the bass end and combinations of effects and stuff like that. But maybe if somebody is like, oh, I want to be able to step into a gig and be so confident within a style that nobody knows that this isn't my main thing.
Yeah.
Maybe that is a thing. And I'm sure, you know, and I dig that.
I know.
Yeah.
It's badass. And again, I don't know that I accomplished that, but it was interesting. Like when I would do a gig, I'm not busting out the synth sounds on the, you know, on the piano. Like I played for this artist called Lori Line, and it was all instrumental piano music, and it was very light, very like easy listening vibes. Right. And then I was a completely different player in that environment. I played mostly upright, you know, and then electric a little bit, but it was ultimately, I will say this, tasting all those different things made me feel like, okay, I get it. I'm going to take a few things from all of these different genres, right? And I'm going to then really focus on the things that I love. Real quick, case in point, I played with this band called The Brighton, and they had a bass player that did a lot of this baritone guitar stuff with spring reverb and tremolo. And I had to sub for him. And then I was like, oh, this is really hip. And then that is what cult. Then I was like, oh, this reminds me of my childhood. Reminds me of listening to Glenn Campbell. It reminds me like, wow, I didn't even know you could do this on the bass. Right.
Yeah.
So shout out to Aaron Fabrini, Ben Rosenbush of the Brighton, who really brought me, like, if I hadn't subbed that gig, I wouldn't have discovered that love of that particular sound for me.
That's wild.
I never, ever would have, you know, I never even thought it was possible. So it was about like, I needed a reason to make that sound in order to fall in love with it. And I needed to be that chameleon, step in and kind of play that, you know, play a bass six on that gig and, you know, and go like, oh my God, this is actually really brilliant. It was because there was a reason, not just because I thought it would be cool to buy a bass six one day. It was like a gig.
Yeah, man. I dig that. So maybe it's not, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's like semantics actually, but maybe like level one is learning to play, level two is understanding and learning the language of music, not only harmony, but different styles and being able to, you know, be able to step into a situation where you're not going to fall apart on a jazz gig and you're not going to fall apart on a Latin gig and you rock gig, great, you know what to do. Pop gig, great, you know what to do. You know what to do to sit, to fit in that situation. And I think that there's such a huge value in doing that. And maybe level three is finding your musical voice. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's not specializing, because maybe, well, actually, I guess sort of like, even if versatility is your thing, you are kind of specializing in versatility. But
I like that.
Fucking around with semantics here. But yeah, it's finding your musical voice, isn't it? And and for some people, a lot of people, that will be going deep into a particular thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But is it predicated on a time period of versatility?
I think it's personal.
I think for me, it was. It was absolutely predicated on me tasting a bunch of things. I think I could have just stayed. I mean, for me, it was a decade.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, I could have just stayed in the rock band that I was in as a kid and done that thing. And I know a lot of people, and it's no shade at all. I mean, there are some amazing players that have just stayed in that kind of like, you know, heavy rock, heavy melodic rock zone. But then that's the stuff that they do. And listen, if that's what you want to do, awesome. I wanted to venture out. I wanted to play more things. I wanted to be more versatile. And for me, coming back to this idea of voice, artistic voice, it was absolutely predicated on getting good or understanding my role in a lot of different environments personally. Got
it. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Maybe it's like really personal. Like for me, I was always into like jazz improvisation and fusion-y stuff. So maybe that always ran alongside for me. But I will say that most of my musical knowledge in terms of how music works, you know, harmony and stuff like that, actually did not come from studying jazz fusion.
Is that right?
Because
it's more like linear lines almost,
there's lots of linear lines and stuff like that. The chords are kind of like out there and not connected. And you know what I mean? Like, whereas like most of mine came from, you know, studying like jazz standards,
you know, Beatles music,
sort of like regular pop songs, you know, like that kind of thing. Right. Most of it came from that actually. So that definitely did inform my musical personality. Yeah. It's great, isn't it? Do you know what always fascinates me is that the timelines seem so long, don't they?
Yeah.
They seem so, when you really want to get fucking good at something, like you actually really want to get good at something, like you've got to dedicate sort of like a chunk of your life to it.
Yeah.
A chunk.
I think
it's not like it's, you know, it's like you can do out what I do know for sure that you can have massive improvements in your playing over short periods of time. I'm sure that you felt that, where you'll just suddenly your level will just sort of like just come up out of nowhere and you're like, whoa, what happened? But when you, so like, and that for me is like when I've been focusing in on things for like 8 weeks, 12 weeks, maybe 6 months, really going deep on something, you can really feel that traction. But when you zoom all the way out, it always like surprises me, like, holy shit.
We've actually been talking in it a while.
Yeah. It takes a long time. And I actually think that it was something I was thinking about today, is that success, however you, you know, define that on an instrument, like learning an instrument and being really competent at it, is actually much more of a mental exercise than a physical exercise. It's less about the actual physicality of it, and it's much more about your mental endurance of doing the thing. And it's just so like it is a marathon. It's a marathon, yes. And you're going to be continuing to try and be better at whatever you're doing. And if it's much more of a mental exercise than a physical one. I was thinking about that today.